Never.
Shh. 12:30 at night. Last mishmar. Is there any better place in the world to be than right here? This is it. This is the best place in the world. Okay, one last one. Pasuk begins, Re'eh Anochi Noisen Lefneichem Ayayim Bracha V'Klal. See that I have put before you today a blessing and a curse. So all the Balei Musar, all the Balei Ashkafa, Balei Chasidus, everybody asks the same question. What does it mean, Re'eh? See that I have put before you today a blessing and a curse. That's not something you see. That's something that you experience. That's something that you know. What does it mean to see that I have put before you today a bracha and a klala? There's a story. It's published in one of these Frum magazines. This story was published ...17 years ago, something like that. My wife and I were newly married. We had the privilege of learning in Kollel in the beginning of our marriage for 6 years. And my wife showed me this article. The story stayed with us for many years. It's a story that we tell over to our own children. The story is written by, it's a true story, was written by a man who is really telling over his own story. And he spoke about how he grew up in a very poor family. And he loved yeshiva. Because in yeshiva, everybody was the same. I guess in his yeshiva they had a dress code, a uniform. They probably all wore the same black and white. And nobody looked rich or poor. In yeshiva, everybody ate the same yeshiva food. Everybody learned in the same Beis Medrash. How much you had did not define you. He was a bright guy. And in yeshiva, he excelled because he felt comfortable. Rose through the ranks to become known as one of the top guys in yeshiva. And when it came time for him to get married, the Rosh Yeshiva suggested to him a shidduch, a girl whose father was very wealthy, a father who was committed to helping his daughter and his future son-in-law sit and learn in Kollel. And he had come to the Rosh Yeshiva and said, give me one of your top guys. And this guy was a top guy. So they went out. Shidduch was appropriate. They got married. In the beginning of his marriage, he was sitting and learning in Kollel. And then after a number of years, his father-in-law called him in for a meeting with him and his brother-in-law. His father had two children, a boy and a girl. This guy married the daughter. There was a son. And the father, who had a very successful business, said to his son-in-law, the guy who was writing the article, and to his son, it's time for me to start thinking about retiring. It's time for me to start thinking about moving on. I want to offer the business to you guys. It's going to be your business. Multi-million dollar business. So, go home, discuss it with your spouses. The guy writes that inside of himself he was jumping for joy. He was a frum guy, he was a shtark guy, he was sitting and learning. But inside, he was still a little bit that same poor kid who grew up who said, I just want a little bit more money. I just want a little bit more money. He came back to his father-in-law and he said, okay, I'm excited to be a part of the business. But his brother-in-law came back and said, I'm not interested. You can have the business. His brother-in-law was also sitting and learning in Kolo. He said, you can have the business. So he met with his brother-in-law and he said, look, I'm not super comfortable with this. You're the son. I'm the son-in-law. You have the opportunity to have this multi-million dollar business that we're going to be partners in it. You sure you don't want this? He said, I'm not interested. It's not the life that I want. It's not the lifestyle that I want. Not looking for this. He said, okay, I want you to know that even though I'm going to be the one taking over the company, I'm always going to help you out. I'm always going to help support you. I care about you very much. You know there'll always be a place in this business for you if you want. His brother-in-law said, it's all yours. Mamish, don't worry about it. So he left Kolo and he joined his father-in-law's business. And he writes that as he was walking around the offices one day with his father-in-law, he had been making suggestions how they could improve this, how they could do that. His father-in-law said to him, I've been longing for your head to be in this business for years. This is what I've been longing for. The guy writes, my heart was exploding. All those years, all the pain of being raised as a poor child, and finally, having not only the money, but having this guy who's built this multi-million dollar business say, it's so good, this is for you, you can have this. And eventually his father-in-law retired, and he took over the business in Gansan. He took over the entire business. And the business under his guidance takes the next step, and it improves, and takes the next step after that. And what was a multi-million dollar business becomes significantly larger. But you know the price you pay. All of a sudden, so many meetings, so much pressure, the learning slowly but surely falls away, and he's raising his children in a more opulent fashion than what he had been raised with, and he's able to give them all these things. The article finishes. The article is entitled My Brother-in-Law's Gift. The article finishes where he's married off some of his children, and not to the starkest people, not to the most serious people. But he's going to his brother-in-law for Sukkos to visit. The family's getting together on Sukkos. And he walks in to his brother-in-law's sukkah, his brother-in-law who never left Kailo, who's been sitting and learning all these years, his brother-in-law who had children the same age as he did, his brother-in-law who's sitting there with his married sons and his son-in-laws who are all sitting and learning, flourishing, budding Talmidei Chachamim in their own right. And they're sitting in the sukkah, and they're discussing a sugya in Gemara and Sukkah. A heated debate, whatever the debate was about, the article doesn't say. And as soon as he walks in, they all get up, they greet him with a smile, Shalom Aleichem, how's everything? And they sit down at the table, and there's an awkward silence. Because now that he's arrived at the table, the conversation, the heated debate about that sugya that they were learning, it just doesn't feel appropriate to them to have that conversation, that dialogue, that debate in front of him. And so they awkwardly say to him, Nu, how's business? And the guy who's writing the article is... And he wrote it under a pen name, but it was a true article. He was talking about regret. And how did it come to be that I, who was considered a top guy in the yeshiva, that when my father-in-law came to the yeshiva and wanted a top guy, the yeshiva pointed to me, how did I get all the way here that now it's uncomfortable to have a discussion and learning around me. That my brother-in-law and his sons and his son-in-laws to sit there and discuss Gerasik and Lavud and what's called Mechitzas on Sukkah. It's strange to them to have that conversation in front of me. He felt embarrassed. And he writes, what I thought was a gift, what I thought was a gift from my brother-in-law, that he gave me the business. There's no doubt that it was a gift. He made tens of millions of dollars running this business. But it wasn't the gift that he thought it was. And he was expressing a certain level of regret at the life that he could have had. That he looked at his brother-in-law and he was nispal from the chashivas and Torah. A person who sat and learned with such diligence. Why do I tell you this story? To tell you that you sit and learn in Kailo for 20 years? That is definitely not my agenda. But what struck me most about that story was sometimes what we perceive to be a gift is far from a gift. And sometimes what we perceive to be a curse is far from a curse. There's a movie. Don't see it. Don't see it. It's not mutter to see. There's a movie. The name of the movie is, I can't believe I'm doing this, I just told you not to see it. The name of the movie is Sliding Doors. Don't see it. Don't see it. It's an inappropriate movie. You shouldn't see it. In the movie, there's a scene where this girl gets fired from her job. She takes her box. She goes down the stairs. It takes place in England, this movie. She goes down to the tube, which is the subway. And she does that little dance. You know this dance. Where somebody's coming up the stairs and like you try to go to the right and they try to go to the right at the same time and then you go to the left. And you know that little dance, that awkward dance? So where finally somebody says, okay, you go here and I'll go there. That's how you get by each other. So this girl, this woman who just got fired, she does that little dance and then she walks down the stairs and she just misses the sliding doors of the subway. And as a result, she has to go back up the stairs to try to catch a taxi. She gets mugged. She has to be taken to the hospital to get stitched up. And that ends the scene. What's cool about the movie, don't see it, what's cool about the movie is they replay that entire scene. The woman gets fired. She has her box. She's going down to the tubes. This time, instead of doing that little dance, the mother and the child who are blocking her, they just go to the left, she goes to the right, she makes the subway. She goes home and she catches her boyfriend cheating on her. She gets a haircut, because now she is like, you know, she's mitchazek, yeah. And the entire movie is actually two movies. One, if she makes the sliding doors of the subway, and one when she misses. An entire movie that's two stories at once. You see, we have these sliding door moments in life. There is something called an unlived life. You know what it means to have an unlived life? Everybody in this room has an unlived life. The unlived life is, what would happen to you if you would have made one decision just a little bit differently? Like, I imagine that some of you this summer had other opportunities, other summer programs, which I'm sure no doubt would have been meaningful, growth-oriented, Yirah Shamayim experiences. I have no doubt that everybody in this room was heading towards such a place. Come with a Bekesha, 12:30 at night. I have no doubt that your summer experience was only going to be geared towards Yirah Shamayim. And yet, isn't it possible that some of us could have ended up in different places? What would have happened? What would have happened if you would have gone somewhere else for the summer? It's interesting. We don't know, right? One slight difference, one small little move in a different direction, your entire life could look differently. Because you came to NCSY Kol this summer, you were exposed to certain guys, to certain rebbeim, a certain way of thinking, a certain focus, a dedication to Yiras Shamayim. Probably it will have an impact on what you do next year in 12th grade, which may very well have an impact on where you decide to go in Eretz Yisrael and how long you decide to stay in Eretz Yisrael, which may impact the type of yeshiva or college that you go to afterwards, which may impact the girl that you marry, the community that you choose to live in, the type of children you decide to raise, and where they go to school. And all from this sliding doors moment, because you could have just as easily chosen to go to another program with perhaps a different focus, meeting a different group of people, which could have had a different 12th grade experience and a different yeshiva in Israel, which may have led to a different yeshiva college, a different wife, a different community, a different life. All because of these sliding door moments. And here's the thing about these sliding door moments. We're all choosing. We're all choosing. But sometimes, we think we're choosing a bracha when in fact we're choosing a klala. And it's not always apparent what's a bracha and what's a klala. I'll give you an example. Sometimes you think you hit the lottery. You think you hit the lottery and you're like, this is it. Like, I've got it. It's covered now. Everything I wanted to happen, it mamish lined up. But then it turned out that the thing that you were hoping for, it wasn't going to bring you that satisfaction. It wasn't the life that you actually wanted. And vice versa. So often in life, the thing that appears to be a klala and can be exceptionally painful is very often the thing that spurs you on to the most growth-oriented experience of your life. I'll give you an example of this. My closest friend in the world, he himself had cancer, and he's an amputee as a result of his cancer. His mother passed away from cancer. His father passed away from a type of Lou Gehrig's disease. Certainly, you can say that he is a person who suffered in his life. And yet, when you speak to him, you don't sense the suffering. It's an amazing thing. You don't sense the suffering. In fact, just the opposite. He's a very authentic, besimcha person. He's just a happy person. He once told me that he can tell within 10 seconds of meeting someone if they've suffered or not. I said, really, how can you tell? He goes, because suffering changes you. Suffering will either break you or it'll make you. But you can tell. And I've seen in his life, he's my closest friend. If I could somehow press a button and take away his cancer and give him back his parents, I would press the button. I would. And I'm sure he would too. But he would never give up the klala, quote unquote, of his life. Because it made him the person that he is. And he's an exceptional person. He's an incredible person. When he was going through it, when he was having a piece of his body literally cut off, I'm sure in that moment he thought, this is a klala. I'm never going to have a leg again. That's a crazy thing to think about. We take that for granted. Imagine, like, making the decision, like your parents come to you and you go, we've spoken to the doctors, we need to take off a part of your body. There's no doubt that that's a klala, right? There's no doubt that's a curse. That's a terrible thing, right? Or is it? Maybe what appears to be a klala, as painful and as difficult, as much as we would want to give him back that leg and make him healthy, and yet in his life, I can tell you that he would not be the person, the exceptional person, the amazing person that he is today, if he wouldn't have gone through that, and vice versa. How many people make it in business? They finally got that promotion, and now they have that money to buy that nice house, to buy those nice cars, but then they see what it does to their kids. They see that their kids have become spoiled and entitled. They see the expectations. There used to be a family that went to the Poconos. Used to be a family that had Pesach at home. And now it's Pashut that Pesach is in Cancun. It's Pashut that Sukkot is in Eretz Yisrael. And there's a sense of new Abba, new Tati, buy me this, buy me that. Of course, the money was a tremendous bracha, was it not? Perhaps. But maybe there was a negative impact. Hopefully not. But maybe there was a negative impact. You know, sometimes you speak to these parents that have money and they say, you know, we had to scrounge for it. We had to hustle for it. We had to work hard for it. We put ourselves through college and we made something of ourselves. But our kids, they're not going to have this work ethic because they've been giving everything to them on a silver platter. So was it a bracha or was it a klala? And here's the key, Rabosai. The only way to know, and this is hard. This is really hard. It sounds simple. But the only way to know if what you have is a bracha or a klala is to pay attention and really examine it. It's not enough just to know it intellectually. You have to really pay attention. You have to look and you have to see. You have to say, okay, this person, they appear to have everything. It looks on the outside awesome. But look a little deeper. Pay a little bit more attention. And you might see that what appears to be on the outside is not a bracha, but a klala. This guy who wrote the article, my brother-in-law's gift, he was sure that his brother-in-law was the lo yitzlach. He was sure that his brother-in-law was making a mistake. You're walking away from a multi-million dollar business. The cars, the clothing, the vacations, the houses. He was sure that his brother-in-law was giving up on a bracha. And this guy, again, I wouldn't have said this, but this guy in the article wrote that it wasn't a gift at all that his brother-in-law had given him. In fact, his brother-in-law had taken the gift for himself. You have a big opportunity in your life now. You're very young. You're very young. And that's an amazing gift. Because right now you're thinking to yourself, what do you mean I'm very young? I'm 17. I'm an old man already. I'm going into 12th grade. Rabbi Isai, I got news for you. I know that you think that you're an adult or you're very close to being an adult. You're very young. You're very young. It's, and by the way, that's not a put down. Don't run to be an adult. Trust me, when you get here, you'll want to be in a different place. You don't rush for it, yeah? But you're very young. And you have big, big, big decisions ahead of you in the next couple of years. And they may appear to be small, but they have massive ramifications. So how do you know? How do you know? As you're looking at your life, how do you know? Is it a good choice or is it a bad choice? You have to look. You have to look. Don't assume that what you know to be true is true, because quite often it's just the opposite. I've been, Rabbi Isai, to some of the most beautiful homes. Very wealthy people. And I could tell you from the inside, not everybody, of course not, but sometimes those people are mamish miserable. And I've been to basically slums here in Eretz Yisrael. Tiny apartments where they have nothing. And there's so much Simchas HaChaim. I remember growing up, I was a poor kid. I remember growing up only having hand-me-downs and thinking to myself, if only we had money, if only we were wealthy, then I could dress like the other kids in school dress. Then I'll be part of the chevra. I won't be the kid who's wearing all these hand-me-downs. I remember that feeling. You know what, Rabbi Isai? You get a little older and you realize that's not what it's about. That's not real. That's not what makes a good life. NCSY Kollel is an amazing program. It's also a glimpse. It's nothing more than a glimpse. It's a 6-week glimpse. It's a peek into what a life of Torah and mitzvahs and chesed and Yiras Shamayim could look like. It's just like you blinked and it's over. Don't you remember you just got off the plane? Don't you remember? And here you are tonight, taking your COVID tests to go back to America. It's a blink of an eye. You're going to blink again. 12th grade will be here. You'll be thinking about where you should go in Eretz Yisrael, making the decision, looking at all your friends, where are they going? Because that's how, unfortunately, people make their decisions. You'll blink again. Graduation. I can't believe it's over. 4 years of high school. Minus a year and a half. 4 years of high school. You'll blink again. You'll be back on a plane. Coming to Eretz Yisrael for your years in Israel. You'll get off the plane. It'll be new. It'll be exciting. It'll be fresh. You'll have your ups and downs. How quickly does it go by? You blink. It's January. Parents are coming to visit. You blink again. It's the end of the year banquet. You're making siyumim. You blink again, Shanabet. You blink again, you're married. You blink again, you have children. Rabbi Sai, the days are long, but the years are short. Life goes by very quickly. Sometimes you feel like it's schlepping on, but it goes by very quickly. You turn around 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, and you look at your life and you're going to want to know, did I build a life of bracha or klala? Rabbi Sai, it's the small glimpses that you get along the way of what bracha looks like, and then you got to chase that ferociously. You got to put in those habits every single day, one day after another, and if you want to know what your life is, that's your life. After 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years of habits, of this is what a good life looks like, and I've done that every day consistently, and even if not every day, I had bad days, I had good days, but I had more good days than bad days, months at a time, years at a time, that's your life. That's what you get to look back on. Was I a person who davened? Was I a person who learned Torah? Was I a person who's koveya itim la Torah? Or did I have ambition? Even more than koveya itim la Torah. I want to be a Talmud Chacham. I want to be a person who knows Shas. I want to be a person who finishes Shas. You do that. It's a good life. There's a guy who lives on my block. He's become very famous now. Probably a lot of you have heard of him. His name is Rav Eli Stefanski. Rav Eli Stefanski is famous because he gives, I think, what right now is the most popular Daf Yomi Shir in the world. He has something called the 8-Minute Daf. You ever hear the 8-Minute Daf? So Eli Stefanski was a real estate mogul from Chicago. And when I say a real estate mogul, I don't mean like a Jewish guy who had some real estate. I'm talking about a guy who was a real estate mogul. I can say this Bifar Hesia because he himself went public with it and he spoke about it on the Meaningful People podcast. The guy literally had thousands upon thousands of properties that were his. And then he asked himself one day, with all the stuff that he had, and he lived in a big mansion and he had all the fancy cars. He says, is this what I want? So he moved to Eretz Yisrael and he lives in a beautiful apartment, but an apartment on my block. This is not the, I don't live in the fanciest block in Ramat Beit Shemesh, far from it. And he gave over his entire business to his partner. And he said, I'm going to do the daf. Because he had money, he built himself a base medrash. It's called MDY, Merkaz Daf Yomi. Base medrash, just for Daf Yomi. All day long, Daf Yomi. He gives shiurim, presentations, videos this year. People call in from all over the world. It's unbelievable. He's literally being Marbitz Torah to thousands upon thousands of people every single day. And you know what he said? Don't take my word for it. Go listen to the podcast. You know what he said? This is a life of brach. And he tells people, don't get caught up in all the materialism of the world. It appears to be a bracha, but it's actually an anchor around your neck. Which is not to say that wealth is a bad thing. Chas v'shalom. Wealth can be used in the most unbelievable ways. But Rabbi Sai, you have to know, just because it looks good from the outside doesn't mean it's really good on the inside. For that, you need re'iyah. Re'iyah doesn't just mean looking, it means examination, focus, pay attention to what it really is. It's been a great summer. I did not stay here until, what time is it, 1 o'clock in the morning now?
Yeah.
I didn't stay here until 1 o'clock in the morning just because I like giving shir. I like giving shir on NCSY Kol. Because to have a chevra, I don't know how many guys we have in the room now, 60, 70 guys. To have a chevra that till 1 o'clock in the morning says, let's keep searching for that inspiration. Let's keep searching for that bracha in our lives. It's a privilege to be a part of it. So from the bottom of my heart, and I mean this sincerely, thank you for being a part of my summer, and I really want to thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of yours. But let's not allow this summer to just be a 6-week glimpse. You got to take what you learned here in NCSY Colo, you got to bring it into the year. You got to take the NCSY Colo with you. You have to share it. And you go back to your communities and you go back to your high schools. People say, how was your summer? You say, I spent the summer really focusing on what do I want my life to look like. And then, with Hashem's help, you should have the siyata d'shmaya to be able to make it a reality in your lives. Rabbi Yisai, for the last time, have a beautiful Shabbos.